This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. So my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sophia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy bobopedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
It's time to get green. Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser are in the house. All natural, no pesticides, no artificial ingredients. The Organic Gardeners. Biz Radio 1020 KDK.
These two are raring to go, plus Talking Trees with Davey Trees within the half hour. So get on board. 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank Instant Access, KDK.com. 10th caller right off the top winning that $25 gift certificate from Sorgles. And it is 412-922-1020. Here they are from the Tribune Review. TribLive.com was where you can always find more. Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. I am Doug Oster from the Tribune Review and EverybodyGardens.com.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser.
I forgot your worms in the car.
When you walked into the studio this morning and you go, oh, I forgot I have worms for you. I just looked at you. I was like, okay. It's not something too many workplaces will hear, especially not on a Sunday morning. And may I ask where the worms have come
dried,
from?
And dried worms that you like for your chickens?
Oh, yeah. The mealworms?
Mealworms, yeah.
You didn't save them for your chickens?
I saved some for my chickens.
All right.
And I had some for you.
Awesome.
I thought of you when I looked at my mealworms.
You know what? And it's not just, we don't just feed them to our chickens, although the chickens absolutely love them. But we have had bluebird flocks coming through the garden in the past week and a half, like 15, 20 bluebirds, males and females.
Wow, how cool.
And they come and play in the bird bath and they love mealworms. And so I put some out, you know, a few handfuls in the garden on a little tray out there, and they absolutely adore them. So it's fun to use it for that as well.
You got your garlic in.
Yesterday I was out in the garden and I had to pull up some tomato plants in order to fit the garlic in there. But I did.
How did they look? Because mine looked terrible.
The tomatoes?
My tomato plants.
Oh, yeah, they were.
They're just
really,
like, they're toast. I probably have a couple hanging on there.
Yeah, no, they were definitely done. And so I just tucked them into the little corner of the garden. I probably put in, I know this is a small number for you, but maybe 30 cloves. And I did all hard neck. I have a couple of soft neck varieties to go in too, but I didn't get a chance to put those in yet. So
I talked to the Garlic King of Millvale so I can have mine by Wednesday. The 19th is the day that I'm
Now, compared planting. To my small number of cloves, how many cloves will you plant?
I don't know
probably?
How many I'll end up with, to tell you the truth, because everybody wants a piece of it, you know?
Like right, right.
Got a fishing buddy that wants some. My friend John Oprasik, the artist, he wants some. So I'll have to see how much I get. What happens, happens.
All right. Well, I went down to Enon Valley Garlic Farm at the Swickley Farmers Market, and that's
couple
where
hundred.
I bought all mine, you know? A couple hundred?
A couple hundred I'll probably put in, yeah.
Wow.
It's easy.
Wow. So I should look forward to smelling you next summer.
Don't you always?
As you, I pretty much smell you year-round. No, garlic is like permeating, right?
I was actually
very
sitting
permeating.
There eating it raw last night, the little cloves.
Oh, no. Uh-huh.
And then I interviewed, I know you did a story on garlic. I interviewed Lynn Lang, uh-huh. Penn State Master Gardener, who grows 27 different types of garlic. And she told me her fantasy was to have a big tasting raw sauteed and roasted of all the varieties. And she said, who would I get to do that except you?
Yeah, I don't think I do the raw. Like that raw is just a little too intense for me. Even the more mild varieties are too intense for me.
I love the raw. You know, I love that flavor.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
Good for you, too.
It is good for you. And I love cooking with it. We use a lot of it at home. And why I always grow those soft neck ones is because although they aren't quite as hardy here and there's not as much of a selection of the soft necks, boy, do they last a long time. They store for like 9 months to a year, but the hard necks you can only really get maybe 3 months storage out of them.
Well, Lynn was telling me about a couple ones that she's growing that are smaller hard neck varieties. That do store well.
Oh, cool. Okay.
You know, she's in general the hard necks don't store as well, but she found, you know, some that are they're tightly packed or something about them that or whatever the liquid in there. You know, she seems to think the smaller cloves store better because I don't know why, but she said, you know, and that's a lot of time with the soft necks, they're a little bit smaller.
Right. But I just like that. I like ones that will last a long time. Because, you know, if you grow a lot like you do, I mean, you only have such a short period of time in which you have to consume all of them. And I'm a garlic lover, but not to the, obviously, extreme that you are. So I often can't consume that many heads of garlic in that short period of time.
I found some steaks on sale the other day. So yeah, I spoke at Penn Hills yesterday, and a friend from work came, always brings her mom to see me. And she said, I was on the road, and I found this, and it's just like this little jar of ultimate dried garlic, no salt. And so I put that all over the steaks last night, dry rubbed it, and then cut up a giant head of garlic and threw it into the bag with the steaks, you know, and really cut them up small so that all that flavor permeates into the meat.
Delicious.
It's going to be there all day. Ooh. I'm going to put them on the grill about 3:30 today. So,
oh boy, it'll be a garlicky steak. All right.
Sounds delicious. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a short break. We'll come back, check some sports, and then get ready for your phone calls. By the way, congratulations to Alice from Pleasant Hills, winner of that gift certificate from Sorgel.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. Is Radio 1020 KDK.
All right, no calls right now, but we'd love to hear from you. This would be a great time to call while all of the lines are available. If you want to get a question into Doug and Jess, 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank Instant Access, KDK.com.
Bought a flat of pansies, put some pansies in the containers, actually violas, and all the same color. That was kind of fun.
And I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Did you grow pumpkins in your garden this year?
No, actually, funny story. Something sprouted up in the woods, you know, something like a pumpkin or something. And I was just like, oh, yeah, this is not going to make it, you know. Then it put a little pumpkin on, and then I left it there too long, and the deer just like,
oh, yeah,
put their foot, smashed it, and started eating it.
Yep, you know? Yep. They do that.
Yeah.
Was it a pumpkin? So it was an orange, I mean, classic looking pumpkin?
It was kind of white, striped, gourdish.
Yeah.
Pumpkin-ish.
So some random natural hybrid that happened in your garden. And you know what? It's interesting because I wrote an article for the Trib a couple weeks, maybe last week or the week before, about sort of these natural hybrids that take place in your garden, because there's so much confusion about, like, you know, people will put zucchini in this part of their garden, and then they'll put winter squash in this part of their garden, and they think that they're going to somehow cross-pollinate, and then you're going to get some funky fruit. But that does happen, but the funky fruit doesn't happen until the next year. So if you would save seeds from that zucchini or that squash and plant it in the garden, then you never know what you're going to get. Because the members of that cucumber, squash, pumpkin family all cross-pollinate with each other. And that's how you end up with the funky ones like the one that grew in your woods, which...
I haven't grown vine crops in I don't know how long.
Really? Not even cucumbers?
Well, cucumbers, but this was definitely a big leaf.
Squashy pumpkin.
Squash,
thing. Yeah.
Pumpkin type thing. And I just can't imagine where it came from, where that seed came from.
Yeah. So, well, maybe, you know what? Maybe didn't you have chipmunks and squirrels in your garden?
I mean, lots, you know, of chipmunks and
maybe
squirrels.
Some little squirrel nabbed it and went and buried it somewhere, you know, and it's where you end up with those little unusual things like that every now and then. So, all right, I think we have a call, right?
We do. Let's say hi to John. Hey, John, good morning in Bethel Park. How are you?
Good morning, friends.
Morning.
I have a question about cleaning up my zinnias. Some of them I will be able to leave till spring, but I've got a section I'm going to have to take out now. I plant next year using the no-till, or I'll just spread all of the compost and plant. When I pull those zinnias out, do I need to pull them up and get those roots out of the way for next year, or can I just cut them off at ground level?
Okay, that's a really good question, and this is this is something I face in my garden from time to time, because sometimes annuals like that are so well-rooted that it's really challenging to pull them out in the fall and actually get all of their roots out with them as well without involving a shovel or a pickaxe or something like that. So it is okay for you to cut those zinnias down at ground level and leave those roots in the ground. By next spring, you'll be able to tug them out really, really easily once those roots have died and sat through the cycle of winter. But in my garden, I actually let everything stand through the winter. So
even the annuals.
Even
like
the annuals. Oh. Annuals, perennials, I just let them there for the winter, with the exception of if something was diseased. So if you grew zinnias and they had powdery mildew, or if you grew begonias and they had, you know, fungal botrytis on them or something like that, those I pull out and get rid of in the fall. But everything else, I just let stand through the winter. It's better for wildlife, obviously, and you know me and my bugs. But it's also so much easier to do in the spring because they do pull out of the ground so much easier. They're lighter to carry, lighter to haul away in the wheelbarrow. So there's nothing wrong with letting things stand like that through the winter. And also with zinnias, the goldfinches adore the seeds. And so once those seed pods mature, you'll start to see the goldfinches perched atop of them and plucking the seeds out.
For you?
What stuff sprout?
Like a zinnia or any other annual sprout?
Yeah, absolutely. If they might drop seed as well, this happens a lot with like my cosmos, the salvias. My larkspur for sure. You know, I let them just stand in the garden and they drop seeds, and even marigolds sometimes will reseed themselves, and then they come up in pretty cool places the next spring, and I just let them do their thing. So just sort of a little more natural way of gardening than feeling like we have to tidy everything all of the time.
Yeah, and, you know, since you started doing it, I'm leaving all my perennials and everything up as long as I can, all the way through till next year. And, you know, I'm always asking you, can I cut it back yet? Can I cut it back yet?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard thing because it's so contrary to what people were taught for so many years, as far as, you know, quote-unquote cleaning up the garden and everything has to go to bed tidy. And that's certainly, you know, when I started teaching way many years ago, that's what we taught. We taught everything needs to go to bed sterile for the fall. But it's really changing because so much research is coming out pointing to the fact that all of our native pollinators, butterflies, beneficial insects like ladybugs and lightning bugs and all these good insects need a place to overwinter, and they can do it in our gardens, but we have to leave them alone for the winter.
You know, when I moved here to Pittsburgh, I brought a truckload of plants, and one of them was horseradish. And so I just kind of stuck it in this bed that I knew would be for flowers, but I figured I'll just stick it here. I can put it here for now. It's 20 years later.
It's still there.
Yeah, and there's no way to get rid of it. There's no way to get rid of it. Yeah. I'll harvest it here. I think I'm going to do it this week for a video.
That's going to be fun. But goggles. Wear goggles.
I do it always outside.
Yeah.
I told you the story. The guy who gave this to me, he told me the story that his grandfather was grinding the horseradish and had it in a container, and he just said, "Hey, Billy, come on over. Take a sniff."
Oh.
And he put his head right in there and took a big whiff and went right back.
Oh, he passed out.
Yeah, it was that strong.
Wow.
And I was grinding it once, and I was reading, you know, I hadn't done it before. I was reading that some people do it in the spring. Some people say the spring is a time to get the strongest, sometimes the fall. And I was grinding it, and I was like, I'm not really getting, maybe this isn't really strong. And I put my head in there and took a big whiff, and it was like
clearing out your sinuses.
Yeah. I was coughing, and yeah, I do it outside.
Yeah, that's smart.
All right, we got a text message. It says, how do I control Rose of Sharon?
Oh, you just opened up. Speaking of the can of worms that we were speaking of earlier, this is a can of worms.
What could be worse than horseradish?
Oh, Rose of Sharon. What was the question? How do they control it?
How do you control it?
How do you control it? Yeah,
well,
right?
Well, I'll tell you how I control
you
it.
I'll tell you how I control
it. Yeah, I love Rose of Sharon just because, these trees. When I brought that horseradish, I brought the four Rose of Sharon trees with me, little ones that were babies of the big giant one that my kids played basketball under, and I don't know, I just have an affinity for them. But yeah, they just pop up everywhere. You know, whenever I see them pop up, I just cut them down. That's all I do. You know, there's really no way to control them.
Yes, there is.
Go ahead. How do you control them?
If you want to have a Rose of Sharon and you don't want to have the babies everywhere, right now is the critical time for you to control them. And that's by shearing that plant, which means removing all of those seed pods, basically like deadheading them. So what?
Good luck with the 15, 18-foot tree.
Now, obviously, if it's a tree, that's a different story. But you think about around here, most people grow them as sort of a smaller stature shrub, right? Where they're maybe, you know, 4 or 5 feet tall, in which case you can go out and do that. And I don't ever recommend like hedge trimmers for anything, but this would be a good job where you could go out with a hedge trimmer.
You can't kill a Rose of Sharon.
Exactly. Where you could go out with a hedge trimmer and you could just shear off, or even like a long bladed lopper, and just cut off the very tips. You don't want to cut back the branches too hard because you don't want to affect next year's flowering. But basically what you're doing is just removing those seed pods, rake them up, and then get rid of them. Because if you, that's the main reason why I don't like Rose of Sharon. I mean, they're lovely for the pollinators. The bees adore them, but they make
and
those
the birds
babies.
Love their seeds.
The birds love the seed, but they make the babies everywhere and it drives me nuts. And that's really why I don't enjoy them. But if you can get out there this time of year and remove those seed pods, you know, depending on how big your tree is, it'll take you less than an hour to do it if you do it with a long bladed loppers or a hedge trimmer, and there's your control.
And the nice thing is a lot of the newer varieties are sterile.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that anymore. But the old fashioned ones, boy, it's a pain. I don't really even worry about it. You know, when I see them, I cut them down because they don't just spread up from the seeds. They also just sprout up from the roots.
Yeah,
you know?
They sucker. Yeah. Which, I mean, you know, if you want a flowering hedge and it blooms in the summer when not much else blooms, you know, that's the benefits of it. I mean, it is in flower, is a flowering tree and shrub that is doing its thing when few other flowering shrubs and trees are. So that's definitely a benefit. But, you know, the drawbacks with that are, you know.
I bought one of the newer ones just because I love doubles, a double called Blue Chiffon.
Oh, I wonder how that probably won't see many pollinators on there, but I bet the flowers are beautiful.
You know what? It's technically a double, but it's not a super double.
Okay.
So I do see lots of bees on it.
Oh, good.
It's like if it's real fluffy, it's impossible for the bees to get to the pollen. But this one, it looks a lot like a regular Rose of Sharon, but just with
extra frill.
A little bit of doubleness.
All right. Can you do this in about a minute? Any advice on raspberry bushes?
Go ahead. Jess is the raspberry
Any
expert.
Advice on, well, it depends on what
Here's
kind of
my,
raspberries.
My advice, I never do anything on my raspberries, but she has a whole thing. I cut them back halfway and all this and that.
Yeah, without knowing what variety they are specifically, whether they're black or red raspberry, sort of if you don't know what the heck to do with them, the good rule of thumb is in March to go out and cut all the stems back down to about halfway. And that sort of covers your bases, whether or not they're going to form berries on this year's wood, next year's wood. I mean, because all the varieties are different. So you can go out in March, cut them all back halfway, and you're pretty much saving yourself from having to know all of that information. Now, granted, if they're the ever-bearing ones that have a spring and a fall crop, you could be affecting that, but this is a good rule of thumb, is about halfway.
All right, listen, we've got wide open phone lines. We'd love to hear from you with Doug and Jess just waiting to get any of your questions answered in the way of gardening. You can call us right now, and you'll get on the air within our next segment, just a couple of minutes away, right after a quick break in CBS Radio News, an update at the bottom of the hour. 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDK.com.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. News Radio 1020 KDK.
All right, what do you say we take the 10th caller right now to win a gift certificate to Janoski? It's going to be a great day for Pumpkin Land starting at 10 today. 866-391-1020 is the number to talk to Doug and Jess, but that number to get that gift certificate is 412-922-1020.
And now it's time for Talking Trees, a service of the Davey Tree Expert Company.
We are joined by Ron Hegner from the Davey Tree Expert Company. And Ron, today we're talking about getting those trees ready for winter.
Yeah, it's been a tough summer, sort of a backward summer. It was cool when it should have been hot. It was hot when it should have been cool. And, of course, we had the third driest September on record. So a lot of stuff going on.
Especially for newly planted trees, boy.
Yeah, and we saw a lot more disease activity than we've seen in normal years. July and August was a little cooler. The constant rain, all those conditions were good for all types of leaf diseases, all kinds of turf disease. Just sort of, in the 31 years I've been doing this, I've never seen so much.
Mm. Wow.
So what's the first thing we should be thinking about for our trees?
Well, fall is a great time to fertilize. Deep root fertilization is probably the way to go. Let's help to replenish some of the sugars and carbohydrates that the plants were not able to produce if they were defoliated by all this turf or all this leaf diseases this year.
So that's when you put the big sort of needle-like injector down into the ground and you inject the fertilizer right down into the root zone so it gets just exactly where it's needed.
Correct. We put that in 12 to 16 inches, something like that. But the trick is you want to go clear out to the edge of the drip zone. You don't want to just fertilize right around the base of the tree. You want to get all the way out to the edge of the drip zone. And another added benefit from that is that when you do that, you're actually aerating the soil. And that aeration around the, you know, those fine root hairs is very beneficial.
And what about watering?
Well, again, we've got lucky. Now, we've had some rain, but going into the wintertime, a lot of people sort of lose track that, you know, it's wintertime or fall time's coming, and, you know, we don't have to worry about that. But a lot of trees, especially evergreens, if it had continued to be dry, you know, they need that irrigation. They need to be well watered going into the wintertime.
And then, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and I know this is also a really good time of year to do pest control. And you guys do oil sprays right now?
Yeah,
what's involved with that?
We'll start spraying horticultural oil here. We like to see a certain amount of time of below 32 degrees so that, you know, the plants harden off enough. That way, then we can, you know, put that product down at about a 2% ratio. And it's good to get overwintering insects. It's a suffocant, but the trick to that is good coverage because you get no residual activity. It's basically what you get it on is what you get control of.
So you might do that like on fruit trees, or would you still do that on like a scale, like if a magnolia had scale or something like that? Is that another example?
Yeah, scales especially. Oils are great for scales. You know, Doug mentioned real quick hemlocks and the hemlock woolly adelgid. That's, you know, oil is a good product to do spring and fall to control that insect. We see a lot of obscure scale on pin oaks, and that's something that most homeowners just don't see.
Is that really the name of it, obscure scale?
They call it obscure scale for a reason.
Oh, I thought it was just an unusual one that you don't see very often.
We see a lot of it.
It's obscure scale. Why? Because it looks really unusual? Or
it's very hard to see unless you're up in the tree looking at it.
All right.
It's sort of a brownish small scale insect.
It looks like a bump on a stem.
I see. Well, lots of times there's lots of bumps, and we see that on mostly on pin oaks that have not been pruned. So pruning and thinning, and you know, increasing that air circulation, you know, it's good for the tree, and you'll have less scale problems on them that way.
And how about mulching?
Well, you know, again, people forget about mulching. I mean, in the springtime, everybody's all, you know, let's
mulch
go
crazy.
They get mulch crazy. But, you know, if you have perennials you're going to cut down or you take stuff out, get into those mulch beds. Even just use a stiff rake. Turn that stuff over. because, you know, you want it to compost a little bit. If those mulch layers, and here again, everybody likes to have fresh mulch, so year after year, they're putting layer upon layer upon layer, and it actually gets to a point where it starts to repel water instead of absorbing water. So get in there, turn that over, keep it soft, keep it fluffy. You know, it's a good thing.
Now, with fall, with all the leaves falling all the time, do you still keep the top down on that yellow Corvette?
I had it up today. It was a little bit chilly, but on the way home, I know it's going to be down.
It'll be warm. It'll actually be light outside by the time you leave.
Windows up or down?
Oh, down.
Windows down, top down. If you're going to have the top down, why wouldn't you have the windows down? That's my question to you convertible owners.
Hey, I've got heated seats if it's that bad, so it's not that.
Oh, there you go. The convertible down and the heated seats on. I really like that.
Heater blowing, you know.
What do we think for fall color this year? Because we haven't seen that much of it yet.
I don't know. A lot of things. Maples started to defoliate even last month with that hot spell. Mm-hmm. I'm not optimistic it's going to be a great fall color, but who knows? You know, we'll have to wait and see.
What are your favorite trees for fall color?
Oh, maples.
Maples.
Yeah. I'll tell you, something that has a beautiful fall color you don't see a whole lot of. It's vibrant red is Tupelo or black gum.
That's my favorite tree.
Oh, I love those
trees. That's my favorite tree.
They have the best fall color.
Yep. I mean,
is that your favorite tree, Jess?
That's my favorite tree. I can't even tell you. I have one that we got as a little sapling from Tree Pittsburgh this spring, and it is only about 3 feet tall right now, and it has the most incredible red color, and I can't wait till it gets to be 30 feet tall. So I really, and I have the Tupelo, the Zydeco Twist, which is the contorted one as well. That hasn't shown any color
yet. What does that look like? That sounds interesting.
Oh my gosh, it's really cool. It's a weeping contorted version of the black gum tree or the Tupelo, and it's called Zydeco Twist is the cultivar. It is just such a cool tree, and it does get that brilliant red, but it doesn't do it until later than the regular Tupelo does.
So maples, black gum. I love shagbark hickory for that late yellow color. What else can we think about? I love sassafras.
My sassafras is beautiful too. Yeah.
One thing, just to go back to black gum, people don't realize this. Black gum will grow in very wet conditions.
Yep.
So, you know, sometimes people say, what kind of tree can I plant here where, you know, it's a little bit wet? You know, that's a great tree to plant in those naturally wet areas.
Do you see it much? Do you see the black gum very much?
Not as much as I'd like to.
Yeah.
It's a great tree.
Yeah, and it's a great, when it gets.
Did I mention it's my favorite?
Yeah,
okay. I did hear something about that.
When it gets mature, it has a great, very natural pyramidal form. So it's a nice tree. It's
how big? Like a huge 30-foot, 40-foot tree? Or
I've seen them 30, 35 feet. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, just something we don't see a whole lot of around here.
You know, what do you hope for in the winter as far as the season?
No snow.
No snow.
Really? For the trees? Oh, because you get all those broken limbs and everything?
Yeah, we see a lot of, you know, everyone has arborvitaes. Those heavy, wet snows. Yeah, they torture arborvitaes, even things like birch trees, any of the multi-stem trees. You get those ice storms or those real heavy, wet snows. It just busts them up.
I hate winter, but I want cold to get rid of that hemlock woolly adelgid, or at least to kick it back.
Yeah, that happened a few years back. We had been treating all the hemlocks up at the Flight 93 Memorial, and we had done that for 3 years because it took us that long to treat the 40 acres. But we had just two cold winters, and you know that it helped us a lot to get that insect under control. The last two winters have been mild.
Oh, and the hemlock woolly adelgid has been all over the place. Yeah. That horticulture oil really works well, though, to keep it under control.
It's a good product for that. If I looked at 100 hemlocks that were, you know, untreated, unmanaged, I'd venture to say that 80 of them, 80%, had it this year in some form or another. But another problem we see on hemlocks, elongated scale, hemlock elongated scale, it's something that people really overlook. Flip the needles up, look at the bottom of the needles, and you see all these little bumps. And, you know, that's them. And when it gets really bad, you'll see like a white flocking going on. So sometimes people will, you know, misdiagnose hemlock woolly adelgid and hemlock elongated scale if that population is high.
Well, Ron, stick around. We will get some tree questions. For more information about Davy Tree or to ask what's going on with your trees, go to www.davy.com/KDKA. And don't forget, you can always call the experts at Davy Tree at 855-982-TREE. That's 855-982-8733.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. His Radio 1020 KDK.
All right, lots of phone calls, so let's get right to them and say hi to Kim. Hey, Kim, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind, Kim?
Okay, I'm overwintering mandevilla and a shrimp tree and some hibiscus, and I wonder how to wash the bugs off before I bring them in.
I usually put mine in a halfway house. Ron, you know about halfway houses, don't you?
Not really.
I like to bring them in and put them in the sun porch first and see if anything hatches out. And if nothing hatches out, then I bring them in. Just you treat before you see anything?
I actually do the old hose treatment. So before I move all of my, I've got like banana trees and Brugmansia and a hibiscus and same kind of tropical plants that you do. And so I always get that nice sharp hose nozzle on and I blast the plants with water and I do it up and down all the stems, all the branches, upper sides of the leaves, undersides of the leaves. And what that does is it dislodges any pests or most of the pests that are clinging to it, especially things like aphids and soft-bodied insects. And then I let the plant sit outside just until the foliage dries. So I'll do that in the morning. And then by the time maybe 3 or 4 o'clock rolls around, they're ready to go inside. You don't want to blast those off and then let them sit there another day or two when where more insects could possibly find them.
What size is the Brugmansia in? What size pot?
My Brugmansia?
Yeah.
Probably it's a big square one. I would say 25 gallons. Probably.
You're going to bring the whole pot in?
I'll bring the whole pot in. I do it every year. And it's a big, heavy, glazed ceramic pot.
Man, mine's in too big of a pot. No. And I want to bring it in.
Well, use that hand truck I got you for Christmas.
Oh, man. No, this is a huge pot.
It's huge.
I mean, I could do it in the hand truck, but...
Well, you have to get up the stairs into the greenhouse.
I'm not allowed to bring any plants in.
Oh, no. See, I put them all in my garage. All mine overwinter in the garage. I let them go into dormancy. Even the banana trees. I stop watering. I don't water any of them. My fig tree, none of it. All winter long. Even
I could put it in there.
Even my agaves.
I was thinking about making it a house plant, but that's a good idea.
Now, your garage is not attached, though. So your garage does get below freezing. So you can't do it in a garage that gets below freezing.
The greenhouse gets below freezing.
My garage is attached, but it's not heated. So it's all winter long. It stays, you know, in that 50 to 40 degree range in there, which is perfect for overwintering those plants. And even like I said, even my agaves, my succulents that are all potted, those all get moved into the garage until there's barely any room for the car in there. So, but I do that. I do that treatment of using, you know, the heavy spray from the hose before I move anything in. And then every 2 weeks or so, I just take a quick look at those plants to make sure that there is no pest outbreaks on them. And if there is, I just take a wet washcloth and I just literally wipe them off of the leaves. And if I do that every couple of weeks, then I keep everything in check and I keep it well managed and I don't have to resort to any pesticides.
What about like insecticidal soaps?
You could, but so many of those tropical plants are really sensitive to those.
Yeah.
So you have to really take care in reading the label. That is a possibility. I just find for me, if I'm consistent about monitoring them, I can easily remove them by hand. Worst case scenario, if they get really bad, like that happened on my banana trees a couple years ago, I moved them inside and the few leaves that I left on the plants, they just had this like aphid bloom
explosion
on them. And when we had a warm day where it was like 50 out, I hauled those plants outside with the hose and I squirted all of them off again and then moved them inside before nightfall.
Speaking of aphids, I saw something here the other day in Fox Chapel on a beech tree. They're called dancing aphids. Now, you walk up, you look at the branch, and I mean, it's just like white
moving, flocking
all over. You touch the branch, and they all just start dancing around, moving around. It's hilarious. But they do that to ward off predators. It makes them look like there's a higher population. They're larger. Maybe they call them dancing aphids. It's the neatest thing.
I'm going to Google that.
Yeah, do. I'll show you. I have a picture on my phone. I'll show you after we get off the air.
Excellent. Excellent.
Time for one more call. Let's go to Whitehall and say hello to Joanne. Hey, Joanne, welcome to KDK.
Thank you for taking my call, of course. I have a blood red Japanese maple, and it's a offshoot from the main tree. And it seems this year to have a little bit of, it looks like mildew, but it's not mildew, a grayish thing on the leaves. What is happening?
What do you think, Ron?
Again, Japanese maples are prone to a common leaf disease, and it just slips my mind what it's called. But those are usually more brownish in color. Wow, there's lesions on the leaves. Gray, I'm not quite sure what that might be.
Do you think
be.
It could be powdery mildew on there?
I guess it could be, especially as dry as it was in
September. Has anybody recently sprayed that tree with any, like, insecticides or any products at all?
I've never had to.
Okay. I wouldn't worry. I mean, Ron, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like I wouldn't worry about it at this point in the season because all those leaves are going to drop from the tree. Maybe rake them up and haul them out of there instead of leaving them in place so that if there was a fungal issue, it won't overwinter in that those fallen leaves.
You're right. That's a great point, Jess. Any of these leaf diseases we're seeing on trees this year, you know, the trick is, you know, get those leaves out. Dispose of them. If you're lucky enough, you can burn them. If not, dispose of them with your green waste. But that's a source of inoculum, and it's a good idea to get those leaves out of there. And I don't think I'd worry about it either. I mean, pretty soon all the leaves are going to be off that tree. They've done their job all summer long, and I think it's probably more environmental. And I would just sort of address it next year if it happens. If it does, call someone, have us take a look at it. And if need be, we can always submit samples and let them tell us what it is.
All right, we're going to come back and wrap it up, folks. So stay with us on the Organic Gardeners on News Radio 1020. Katie.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. News Radio 1020, KDEK.
All right, final few minutes for the Organic Gardeners, then CBS Radio News, top of the hour, then Joe and Frank Dentisi talking chili on the Coons Cooking Hour.
The number one question asked of us is, why doesn't my hydrangea bloom? Well, Jess, you got yours to bloom.
I can't believe it. I have waited years for this endless summer hydrangea bloom, which is supposed to be one of the most reliable bloomers, but I've never had much luck with this particular plant.
Do you
where
talk
it's
to
planted,
it to get it to bloom?
Oh, I holler at it is what I do. And you know me, I don't have the patience. Usually if they don't bloom in 3 years, they're out of there. This one I've let go because it's in a prominent place. And I thought one of these years it's going to do it. Well, don't you know, it has two enormous, they're the size of my head, big blue flowers. And I mean, every branch, there are dozens of branches. Every one of them has a flower bud at the tip. And I was so excited because they were just about to open. And then yesterday I went out. And the deer ate every leaf and every flower bud off of that whole darn hydrangea. And it's my fault for not using the repellent on it because I'm pretty religious about
spraying
the repellent.
Where is it in your property?
Right by the front door.
In the front there where there's no fencing.
Exactly. Of course. Yeah.
I know. They're moving up into my, like all the way up to the patio getting hydrangeas. And again, you know, I was looking at the plants and I was like, oh, this is nice. They've got some nice buds on them. I can't wait till next year. Well, now, not only the buds, but the leaves too.
And it's a good conversation to have right now because if you planted a young tree or you have a small sapling in your yard, you have to get some fencing around that trunk because the bucks are going to start rubbing their antlers soon. And if they rub all the bark off of a young sapling like that, forget it. The tree is probably not going to make it. So put some protection around those tree trunks now so that you're saving yourself a headache in the coming months.
2 8-point bucks running in the woods and came out the other day and saw that I've got some hostas that are out there unprotected, you know, all gone. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I look up there. He's right there. You know, he just chased him out.
Yep. They are coming up onto our patio now and eating my begonias out of the patio pots, which they have. It's a mother and two. Well, they were babies, but they're older now. They're twins.
And begonias aren't really their favorite.
They aren't. And you know what it was? Those escargot begonias, the fuzzy-leaved begonias, which they have never eaten before.
And you wouldn't think, because of their fuzzy, you wouldn't think they'd like
it. To the nub. I don't know if it's the young ones that are like taste testing everything, but they're getting this particular family of three. Is every morning they're in, have jumped over the fence and come into our yard. So
well, you said about protecting the trees, saplings, and maples. You know, I don't like those wraps that you put around.
Yeah.
I'd like to see, like you said, either fencing or if you go to Home Depot or Lowe's and get some corrugated drainage.
That works good. They won't rub on that.
Yeah, take a utility knife, split it down one side, open it up, put it around the stem of the plant. And that way, then it's easy to take off down the road. If you want to make sure it's secure, put some zip ties around it so they don't push it off. But that works perfect.
Yeah, when do you guys like to take off that protection?
I do it in the spring, the following spring.
Oh, but I mean, the only time they're going to rub is during the rut, right?
Correct, yeah.
But it also protects it from, let's say you have rabbits or voles that want to chew off the bark under snow cover in the winter. It protects it for that as well. And the nice thing about those corrugated drain pipe is there is usually, you know, an inch or so. I mean, you just do have some airspace around the trunk, which does help. You know, cut down on bugs collecting
and
in there.
It protects against sun scald too. And it was winter months when you got the sun shining on that bark, especially thin barked trees like maples. you'll get sun scald from that, and or frost cracks, you know, from the constant changing up and down. So
great, great advice. Thank you.
Remember, the organic gardeners always aim to create a better place to garden
and a safer place to live.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. So my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron and Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. And one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.